This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North. Thanks so much for tuning in today. The shocking stabbing of a 12-year-old girl in Waukesha by two of her friends has attracted media attention from around the world. That attention has been largely focused on writings and a character on a horror fiction website. The names of the accused girls have been all over the news as they stand charged in adult court for attempted murder. Meanwhile, the story of the mass shooting in Santa Barbara, California, has raised concerns by some about the level of attention given to the murderer, who left a lengthy manifesto offering his rationale for the depraved act he was about to commit. Both cases have sparked ethical discussions among reporters and editors, and also by people who head and read news stories. Kelly McBride is senior faculty in ethics at the Poynter Institute, a media training center and think tank in Florida. She joined Lake Effect's Mitch Teich by phone and talked about what she believes are the ethical considerations the media ought to take into account as it sets about covering these stories.
Well, I think they have to consider what the journalistic purpose of telling the story in the first place is. And there are some very good ones. You obviously want to document what happened. You want to inform the public. You want to educate the public on the chances that you might be able to prevent further violence. You want to hold powerful organizations and people accountable. You know, does your police system and your justice system work? You want to scrutinize other systems like the mental health system or the healthcare system. So there are many, many good journalistic purposes behind the coverage of violent events. As a journalist, you want to figure out which purpose you're trying to serve and then really get to the heart of that particular purpose. And it will change from day to day and story to story, but it's very important to keep your goals in mind as you're making decisions about how close to get and when to name names and what photos to use and how emotionally wrenching the interviews should be.
Well, and you mentioned naming names. Here in Wisconsin, where we've just had this stabbing by two 12-year-old girls, many in the local media were quick to name the 12-year-old defendants in the stabbing, the rationale being it was because they were charged in adult court and because the crime was seen as so serious. Does that decision have any ethical ramifications in itself? Does that become one of these cases where the media has, in a way, already tried these girls simply by naming them?
Not necessarily. It is a pretty well-established tradition in mainstream media that you don't name juvenile criminals, and the exception being when a juvenile is charged as an adult because the crime is deemed so heinous. In that case, the journalists are deferring to another system within society, the prosecutor. And if the prosecutor feels like the evidence suggests that these children should be tried as an adult, I think it makes sense for the media not to second-guess that decision, but to treat that individual the way you would treat an adult criminal, which seems really harsh, even as I say it coming out of my mouth. It seems harsh. But you can't make these decisions in a vacuum. You have to let the other systems of justice and ethics and social responsibility inform them, and we have this other system in place. And so if a prosecutor has said, for whatever reason, these children should be tried as an adult or as adults, then I think it's perfectly reasonable for the media to allow that to inform their decision.
What do you make of the argument that's getting a lot of attention lately, especially in light of the killings in Santa Barbara, that many of these tragic, depraved acts are calls for attention, and the more attention they draw, the more people think of media attention as a desired outcome for what they're considering, the feedback loop, if you will?
So I understand why people make that argument, and yet I think when you look at the complex mental situations that most of the perpetrators of these horrendous crimes are in, you can't oversimplify it to a simple call for attention and suggest that if we just didn't name them and give attention to these crimes, then nobody else would do that. There's not a one-to-one correlation there. That said, I think we need to be careful about doing two things. One is making sure that we also name the victims, that we say their names out loud, and that we tell their stories, and we make sure that people understand the value of their lives. And then, secondly, I think we need to avoid being gratuitous in naming a perpetrator. You don't want to maybe use his name in headlines. You certainly don't want to trivialize or allow his name to become a synonymous nickname for the crime. So there are things that we can do that will minimize the notoriety that this person achieves. But I think that the overwhelming good of informing the public and giving people the information they need to understand what happened outweighs the remote possibility that somebody else will commit a similar crime in order to gain the same type of attention. So I would never advocate not naming a perpetrator completely. I think that then the crime itself would take on a whole different sort of power, you know, like, I mean, the way like Voldemort does in Harry Potter. You know, if you can't say the name, it gives the person all sorts of creepy assigned power.
At the same time, people have pointed out that, you know, so many years later, everybody knows Jeffrey Dahmer's name, and almost nobody can name any of his victims.
That's absolutely true. And we haven't seen any Jeffrey Dahmer copycats.
In recent weeks, many media outlets printed or aired the sort of manifesto that the killer in California offered as he was apparently about to do his mass shooting. And of course, here in Wisconsin, the media jumped on the bizarre and horrifying details of what led to the stabbing by the 12-year-old girls. Is there an ethical way to use those kinds of details?
Absolutely. By adding as much context from experts as you possibly can. I was really hoping that someone would annotate the manifesto from Santa Barbara so that you could have a psychologist or a psychiatrist making comments saying, you know, this is an example of delusional behavior. This is a sociopathic tendency where he blames others for his misery, refusing to take any responsibility himself. The more context that you can add to that information, the more you allow the public that consumes it to see it for what it is, rather than being forced to say, well, yeah, that sounds reasonable, or I kind of get it. You give them the information they need to judge the very particular details in their appropriate context.
Do media outlets need to keep their eyes on what other media outlets are doing as the coverage progresses? I mean, none of these stories happen in a vacuum either. And so the issue of proportion in coverage becomes one where, you know, frankly, stories get overwhelming very quickly.
Yes, although that's a very hard conundrum to address, because if I'm the editor of a media outlet, do I not cover a story because my competitors are going gangbusters on it? That takes me out of the equation in the conversation, and will have all my audience turning to them. The reality is the media are, for the most part, in a competitive environment, and you see a fair amount of escalation with sensational stories like this. I think rather than try and account for your competitors' volume, what we need to do at media outlets is to determine what our audience needs and then to give them that information and to make sure that we are advancing the conversation and contributing new knowledge to the marketplace of ideas rather than just trying to match our competitors step for step.
Well, hopefully that's exactly what we have just done now. Kelly McBride, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Kelly McBride is senior faculty in ethics at the Poynter Institute, a media training center and think tank in Florida. She spoke with Lake Effect's Mitch Tyke. Coming up next, why some local clergy have stepped up to demand significant reductions in carbon pollution. We'll have that conversation when Lake Effect returns on Milwaukee Public Radio.